Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang, where we shall be going back to the Bhagavata Vahini, the great Bhagavatam as penned by our beloved Bhagwan. And before we begin going through the Bhagavata Vahini, it is indeed a very poignant coincidence that we are discussing that part in the Bhagavata Vahini where Lord Krishna departs from the physical and moves towards the eternal abode. And we are discussing that just days before the Aradhanam day, which is actually in honor or in respect to mark the day when Bhagwan too departed to the eternal abode, leaving the physical. As we have reiterated many times over and over again, though we feel that we are preparing and doing this afternoon satsang, there are those moments in time when Swami lets us know that we are puppets who feel that they are enacting a drama, but He is the one who is pulling all the strings. Today is one such moment when we feel really overwhelmed at this coincidence of discussing the departure of Lord Krishna on the eve of the day that is there to mark the departure of our beloved Swami. So as always, it is an emotional moment, it's a poignant moment, but full of messages, full of lessons. And more than anything else, as we go through the Bhagavata Vahini, we will see that it is filled with parallels galore. So many parallels that it actually reinforces us, makes us feel a bit stronger, because we realize that we are not alone in our sorrow, in our grief, in our sense of loss. We share this with some of the greatest beings who have walked the face of this earth, the Pandavas, that's whom I'm referring to. So when we go through that, we will realize that we feel a strange kind of strength coming into us. That is what has happened to both Prem and me as we have gone through this. And I'm sure as we go through the story, the same will happen to all of us listeners. So offering ourselves at Bhagwan's lotus feet, we will begin. And to join me, there is Prem. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and very true. I think it's difficult to speak about this episode that Swami has written about in the Bhagavata Vahini without being emotionally involved with the whole thing and without going enriched with some lessons and learnings from it, right? You know, that's what we realize even as we go through it. And the funny thing is we have read this so many times before. You know, I remember reading it when we were in third year undergraduate. I think it was part of our course that time. But reading it now definitely gives a completely different view of the whole, that episode itself. Because as you're saying, some of these arguments, especially what Arjuna gives, you know, that's what we had mentioned last time, that here is Arjuna who has literally gone through multiple tragedies, as we are going to see that another episode which is very difficult on Arjuna. After those multiple tragedies, he is coming and he is giving so much wisdom to the brothers, you know, in explanation of why this has happened. Because many conversations happen, I think that's where we had stopped last time, right?
Yes. So before, Prem, you go into giving the wisdom that Arjuna gives to his brothers, I think I'll just briefly recap where we had stopped. We had stopped at that point when Yudhishthira had got this foreboding. He had felt this kind of premonition that something is not all right with Lord Krishna, and Arjuna's arrival at Hastinapura only confirms it. He confirms that Krishna has left the physical, and this news shakes up all the brothers. They are in a state of shock, and the world seems to have got pulled under their feet. And that is when Arjuna goes on to describe in detail that it's not just Krishna. Krishna leaving was the last that happened. Much before that, the entire Yadava clan destroyed itself. And he goes through in detail all the happenings at the seashore at Prabhasa Kshetra. And in that context, I think we also relived Bhagwan's visit to Prabhasa Kshetra, Swami's visit to Dwarka, the materialization of the idol of Lord Krishna, all that also we had relived in the previous satsang. But basically Arjuna conveys the destruction of Dwarka, the destruction of all the Yadavas, and it was in this sorrowful state that we left the Pandava brothers as well as our listeners in.
Right, and some of the explanations which was given here, that's what I was referring to. For instance, Yudhishthira starts asking, how could this be? You know, it's not something that you envision as the way an avatar would come to an end, because it seems too disastrous for a life so glorious. And doesn't that strike a chord? Because, you know, when we were going through this period, especially, you know, today's the 20th of April, around this time, you know, when we were debating, could this really happen? You know, why is Swami going through this? The only thing we could think of was probably it's going to, you know, result in a miraculous high, where everybody is going to be awed by what Swami has done, and everybody is going to be so thrilled with the turn of events. But when the things happen, you know, all of us are saying that this can't be. You know, look at Swami, look at the number of people Swami has resurrected himself, look at the number of people Swami has cured, and, you know, the phenomenal things that Swami has done. How could an avatar so glorious, you know, come to an, I mean, it's definitely not an end, but how can an episode such as this fit into that narrative of the glorious life that we have been a part of, we have had the opportunity to witness? And that's precisely what Yudhishthira is asking, you know, how can this be? You know, Arjuna who, I mean, we are talking of Arjuna, we are talking of Krishna who gave the vision of the Vishwavirat Swarup in the battlefield. And we've seen the number of ways in which he has protected them. That's what Yudhishthira says. You know, he protected us from so many things. He saved us from calamities. Every time we had an issue, we ran to him. And how is it that Krishna was there and this whole thing happened and he did not stop it and he did not save those people who were his, you know, playmates, who were his people who were by his side when he was governing the kingdom. And he let this all happen. And that's when Arjuna says that, you know, that's the Lord. That you can think all your life that you know him, but you've never known him. You have never grasped even a percentage of what he really is.
You know, as you said, Swami, when Swami was in the hospital, and around this time, 6 years ago, all of us were thinking that surely something beyond our imagination is going to happen, and all this is going to end. If today you look back at it, that is precisely what happened. Swami's stay in the hospital came to an end in a manner that none of us imagined. But it is just that it was not only beyond our imagination, it was far, far, far way beyond our imagination. That's what shocked all of us. In fact, I remember it was on the Ugadi day when our colleague Sai Prakash, he came and narrated of a dream that he had, and he said that as he woke up from the dream, he said he didn't feel good, he felt nauseous, and he said that nausea overtook him and he had several bouts of vomiting. And he said it was very strange because, you know, it was very bitter and I had never seen green vomit. That's what he said. So I was very... And he said, you know, I'm having a premonition that it's not all fine or something like that, he told. And precisely on that day, we received some news that Swami had actually opened his eyes briefly and spoken a few words or something like that in the hospital. So I also remember telling Sai Prakash that, hey, you know, you and your premonitions, it's nothing. It's actually good. It's possibly referring to all the bad coming out, you know, so that only the good remains. And the days following Ugadi, several other people also narrated this kind of, you know, I remember, for example, there was K. Anil Kumar, the lecturer in the chemistry department. He came and told of a dream he got, and he said that it was very symbolic. He felt as if he's doing a final aarti to Bhagwan, and he said, none of us are even considering what if Bhagwan has decided to leave or something like that. And I remember I was utterly shocked. I was like, how could you even think like this? But that was not the only person. Vednarayan sir narrated something to me, and which, you know, not only to me, to many others, where he was saying, what if this is a thing? And at that point in time, I was like, why are these people thinking negative? You know, we don't understand that in the Lord's plan, there's nothing negative or positive. The Lord just has a plan, and that's the plan. But this was the kind of state, and more and more people, different people, you know, the person who was manning the PRO office at that time, Professor Anantharaman, he came and simply asked me, what will you do if you never see Swami again physically? I actually, that time I think I lost my cool or whatever, and I said that, sir, you may do whatever. For you it's a logical thing, but for us if it's an emotional thing, so all your logic, let it go to the dogs, I don't care, okay? Even if you say there's 0.0001% or whatever, that is enough for my faith and emotion to hold on, because God doesn't need any probability. If God decides, you know, all this kind was happening, and a few days later when that announcement came, it was unbelievable. So we can really empathize with Yudhishthira, and though Yudhishthira is the epitome of wisdom and he is an embodiment of calm and equanimity, it is natural that such questions arise, because it will be like, how could this happen? And you know, this was a point in time when we were reminded of 1963, when Bhagwan simply sprinkled water and threw away the paralytic stroke that had apparently been on him for a week or so. We were reminded of him resurrecting people from the dead. You know, so many things. So we know what is Bhagwan's capability. So at that point in time, I remember even thinking that, Tyagaraja, he has that famous song in which Swami also often refers to, where he asked the Lord, why am I suffering like this? Is there a problem in my bhakti, or is it a problem in your shakti? And first Tyagaraja says that, I think there's a problem in your shakti only, because my bhakti is unmatched. But later on Tyagaraja realizes his mistake, and he says that Kapivara di datuna, can a monkey cross the ocean? Will Lakshmi Devi worship your feet? You know, he recalls the glory of Rama and says, Rama, how can I say that you are not having shakti? You have the shakti, possibly it's a fault in my bhakti. At that point in time I felt, Swami, I am having no doubts in your shakti. But also, Swami, maybe I am doubting my bhakti. My bhakti may not be pure, but Swami, don't you have any devotees? Because you have often said many times that the prayer of devotees that helped me recover, you know, when Swami had his hip surgery and his eye surgery, when he came out, he said that. He said, it is a prayer of devotees that has made me come out fit and fine so fast, I will be running very soon. Which means, whether I am a devotee or not, there are some devotees out there whom Swami considers as devotees, whose prayers he listens to. And I was dead sure that I may not know who those devotees are, but I'm 100% sure they're also praying now. And I felt that the kind of prayers that went in for Swami during that period, qualitatively, I have no proof of this, but this is my feeling, qualitatively and quantitatively, they were the highest ever in the Satya Sai avatar, I felt. The number of people praying and the kind of intensity with which was there, and the number of people praying, definitely we can have statistics to find that. And the intensity, I am simply saying it based on the intensity I had. I don't think I prayed like that for Swami any time before in my life, or after that point again in my life. That was the time when I prayed the maximum for Swami. And I felt that, Swami, if all this prayer didn't melt you, this much prayer was enough to melt a stone possibly, but it didn't melt you, which means that my understanding of prayer itself is wrong maybe. Till now I thought prayer is a way in which I communicate or tell God something. But on that day I felt, means my definition of prayer changing. I felt prayer is simply being in sync with the Lord. And when you are in sync with the Lord, whatever you pray comes true because you are in sync with the Lord. And when I am not in sync with the Lord, what you pray possibly does not come true because you are not in sync with the Lord. So that was actually the moment when, that was actually the time when I felt that prayer itself underwent a transformation in its definition, from being a way to communicate with God, telling Him your aspirations, giving Him your gratitude, from that it changed to simply being in sync with the master plan. And by being in sync with the master plan, I mean accepting whatever the Lord does, and then going a step further and rejoicing in whatever the Lord does. I mean, very, very tough, because as we can see, even people, stalwarts like the Pandavas, failed in rejoicing at whatever the Lord did.
The one thing which occurs to me, you know, even as I'm reading what Yudhishthira's arguments are, which were pretty much similar to our own arguments. I mean, you were talking about the lecturers and devotees who came and spoke about premonitions, right?
Hmm.
I mean, I recall speaking to many, many people who were very firm in their conviction that nothing can happen. In fact, I was repeatedly meeting only such people. I hardly met anybody who said, what if, right? I mean, all the students and all of them, in fact, some of the lecturers would, I mean, they would recall so many incidents where, you know, Swami was very sick and Swami cured himself and Swami cured somebody else. And some of them would recall statements they've heard from their gurus, you know, before they came to Swami. And they said, this is Swami, and you know, how can we even think that something like this could happen? And similar problem is what Yudhishthira is facing here, because, you know, what he is asking is, that is actually the nature of faith itself. Our nature of faith is that our faith does depend a lot on logic. We don't realize that. It depends a lot on logic, because we know that, you know, Swami has done this on different occasions. So putting one and one together, this is how Swami will react now. And the moment we say this is what Swami is or this is what Swami will do, it ceases to be faith, right? Because you are defining God who is actually indefinable, and that's not faith. Faith is only acceptance. It is not charting out what God will do, right? And that's what Yudhishthira is asking. How can God do like this? You know, how can Krishna allow this to happen? How can Krishna end this like this? And how can Dwaraka, which is built by Krishna, come to an end like this? Because he was using his logic and it was mixing up with his devotion and faith. And what Arjuna said was, he said, you know, that is the nature of God himself. Because you and I can't define him, that's why he is God. And he says, I mean, look at nature, it has all the answers. And, you know, Arjuna says, the small fish is being eaten by the big fish. And that big fish is eaten by another bigger fish.
Mm.
You know, and that fish is caught by the fisherman. And all of this happens by the grace of God, right? So the grace of God is that which nourishes as well as that which puts an end to what has been nourished. So he says, that is the nature. But, you know, in our one-sided approach to God, we always saw his divinity only in goodness. We only saw his divinity when he came in the form of grace and solved our problems, and then we ran to him with issues and he sorted it out in miraculous ways. But the fact was, the problem coming itself was his, you know, divine aspect. And that's what we missed out. And he says that whether we like it or not, this was also part of his divinity, and that's what is hitting us like, you know, a bolt. And that's precisely what happened, you know, 24th April, whatever happened. Suddenly you realize that this is a Swami that you never knew, right? I mean, all the while, that faith comes from the feeling that I know Swami. Swami will not do this. Swami will never do like this. It will never happen like this. And suddenly, you know, and that is what faith can do, because you don't question Swami, but your awe of Swami grows. That here is a Swami, I've lived 15 years with him, 20 years with him, some people 60, 70 years with him. But the feeling that, oh, I didn't know Swami, right? That actually leads to an awe rather than despondency or depression or whatever it is. It really fills you with so much more devotion to Swami that, oh, he's so much greater than even I could imagine, right?
And that is what Arjuna is doing. But as you said, it's quite amazing that Arjuna is doing this, because
right,
he's the one who is the most shattered. But that is the way in life, I feel. You know, when you need it the most, the strength comes. Because, again, looking back at our own lives, looking back at our own response to Swami leaving the physical, I think we can see that. Because personally, when I look back, that was the time, as I said before also, that I was supposed to be on duty, you know. Photography, I was there as a photographer, and I never in my life imagined that I'll be photographing this. But I had to do it, and today when I look back, I really wonder how is it that I did. I don't remember sitting for more than even 20 minutes near the casket. And honestly speaking, I don't remember crying there in Kulwanthal at all. I cried before and possibly when the body was being lowered. That is when it, you know, possibly the crying broke out. But those 3 days when Swami's body was kept in state, I cried only at home. It's strange, you know. I cried at home. I kept crying at home. But in Kulwanthal, not a single tear would come. I would see people coming and, you know, there were times when I thought possibly I'm so cold. I've become so familiar to Swami that it doesn't feel at all. I was running and seeing who are the celebrities coming, who are the ministers coming. I had to keep an eye for that, because all that was needed for various purposes, part of my duty, shooting, taking photos and all that. And today when I look back, I just feel that is what it is, because along the as you said, we think only the strength is the gift from God, but like the two sides of the coin, head and the tail, in the same way, the problem and the solution, both are gifted to us by Lord, by the Lord. And there are times when the solution comes before the problem, there are times when the solution comes immediately after the problem, there are times solution comes along with the problem. That may, which comes first may vary. Means you're already given the strength and then the problem comes, or you're given the problem and within time strength will be given. But I feel it is important for us to live in that attitude of surrender, wherein we take everything as a gift to us from God, not as a imagination or our attitude, but because that is the truth. That is the truth, and I think that is what the avatar, when he comes in the physical frame, tries to drive in strongly, that whatever we get in life, we have to accept it and then go to the next level of celebrating it, because everything is a gift from God. And the Mahasamadhi too was one such way, thing to accept for us.
And in fact, you know, Arjuna goes on to explain that now when you look at all of these things, you know, you realize, because he has seen two kinds of, you know, destructions, if you could call it that. One is the destruction of the Kaurava race, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of expected that. They were evil all through. You knew that there's going to be a grand ending to, you know, whatever the mess they had created. So he has seen Krishna preside over the destruction of the evil Kaurava race. And that was pretty much acceptable. You know, though they were shaken, and we saw that Yudhishthira was mourning about what had to happen during the war and all of that. But now Arjuna has also witnessed the other part, where here is the city which he has fondly built. Here are these Yadava clans, as we said, have been united by Krishna himself. Literally, like, you know, he's built this whole thing together, and he has seen, almost like the child who destroys the sand castle, I mean, he has seen Krishna just letting it go. And that vairagya which will come is like, you know, that is what Arjuna is expressing here. Because I recall some of them, you know, when this thing happened, when Swami left suddenly, and, you know, people were asking this question, what about the organization? What about the central trust? And what about this? And what about the hospitals and schools and all of that? There are some people who are thinking, what will happen to these institutions? But there were some true devotees, you know, who asked this question. I mean, who I heard them musing loudly this way. He says, Swami has shown us that he is completely detached. He has shown us that, you know, he has built all these things, but he was not bound to these things. And only that describes this suddenly, you know, Swami choosing that, you know, I don't need to do anything. I have done whatever I had to do till I was there. Now I don't need to do anything. I mean, you and I, if we were to build a company, we will think at the age of 80, I have to put a, you know, board of trustees, I have to put this, I have to do that.
Future planning.
Right, and, you know, you write a huge will, you do this, do that. Of course, Swami has subtly done it in his own way. Nobody is saying that he has not done it, but he has not done it like you and I expected, right? You and I, if we build an organization for 60 years, what we would expect out of a person...
That we will not, want it to stay for at least 600 years.
That was that detachment, and the fierce detachment which Swami showed, I mean, shows us that from what level that he operates. And that's what Arjuna says. Now when you look at the whole thing, you realize that nobody does anything or says anything without his will.
See, when you say fierce detachment that Swami showed, no? It is something that you have to look a little deeply to understand, because on the face of it, it looks like Swami was very attached. Swami was very attached because when you see the way he took care of the organization, you know, he was the sole trustee. He took care of everything, and even till the last minute, for every little decision, every small thing, you had to go to Swami, and without Swami's physical approval, things would not be done. When you look at it in a very superficial kind of way, it looks like Swami was very, very attached. But I don't think that is a sign of attachment, because, as you said, when any of us do that, as we turn 70, as we turn 80, we start, you know, writing it in somebody's name, we start making plans for its continuity, we hand over charge to somebody, we do all that. Do you mean to say we are detached? No, no, no. Why are we doing it? We are doing it because it is something we have started and we want it to go on forever. That is going to be our legacy. That is possibly the way that I will continue to live even after I am gone. You know, so we are so self-obsessed, we are so attached, and even after death, even after I die, I am worried about what I have built in a place that actually has no more connection with me. You know, what kind of attachment that is? That is the reason why we do all these kind of writing the will and, you know, we're saying who will be the inheritors, who will be taking care. No, that person is not good. He is not matching in my ideals. How does it matter? Because the way Alexander said, you know, my hands are out. I might have earned everything, but I'm not carrying anything. It doesn't matter what you do here. You know, taking another little detour, I used to see, you know, that when you pass through certain regions in the car, in some villages, these dogs come and attack the car, possibly because you are driving through what they consider their area. Even opposite my building, you know, I have a dog that every time barks whenever I come in any vehicle. And I think, you foolish dog, you are thinking this belongs to you. You know, if I used to think if I just will, I can just catch you and throw you away in such a place, you'll never be able to come back here only. You are thinking this land belongs to you. And that is when it struck me that what I'm telling to the dog, I am also doing the same thing. I'm thinking this house belongs to me, this belongs to me. At least the dog, when it dies, you know, it dies and it no longer belongs. But I want to own it even after I'm gone. That's why I want to ensure it remains within the family, it remains to my friend, to my spouse, to my children. So you see, when actually I start handing over stuff to my children or my relatives or my friends or my well-wishers or whom I feel are trustworthy, I'm not doing it because I'm detached. Though at a surface level it looks like I'm detached and I'm giving up. And though it looked like at a surface level that Swami is very attached, he's holding all the things still close to his heart, at a deeper level he was absolutely detached because it didn't matter. When he lived, that I feel is what Swami's life is. Involvement without attachment. Completely involved. Absolutely detached. That is, as you said, that is the reason why Swami could simply leave and go. So when we see, and that is also the reason why there was a kind of a hiatus or a lacuna immediately after he left. Because people wondered, no, what do we do now? How do we do now? You know. So, as you said, Swami was fiercely detached. But to see that detachment, you'll have to scratch beyond the surface and see the reality.
And the whole idea is, you know, the way we look at an avatar is actually completely different from the avatar looks at his avatarhood. Right? And the most of the confusion and this whole thing, what, you know, somebody like Yudhishthira is asking these questions, and we can relate to it. It's not like he's asking absurd questions. The fact that we can relate to it suggests that, you know, someone like Yudhishthira is also thinking from our point of view when it comes to understanding an avatar. You know, many times I look at it this way. You know, what does an avatar actually do when he comes down to the earth? He does not create a different situation in the world, but he actually kind of brings to our attention some general laws of nature which we have forgotten. Simple things like, you know, if you do good, you will be rewarded. If you pray with a pure heart, the Lord will come to you. I think these are the things we forget. And every time an avatar comes, he kind of, you know, it's like a time warp, and in a short frame of time, he gives you a demonstration of how it really works. You know, different devotees, we've seen that. And, you know, talking about our relation with Swami as students, we've seen that in a even more smaller time span, where today I can say, Swami, I'm very upset with you, I don't need, tomorrow Swami comes and speaks to you. You know, today you say that, Swami, I want you to take me to Kodai, you keep silence for 1 week, and at the end of 1 week, you're there, your name is there in the list of Kodai. I mean, we've seen all this happening to students when they were thinking. And all this while, what Swami was trying to tell is, see, these are the rules of nature which always apply. That if you pray, God will respond. Right? So when an avatar comes, it is to give you a demonstration of this. From the avatar's point of view, it works even when I'm in the body. It works even when I'm not in the body. So redemption happens. When there is an avatar, redemption happens even when the avatar has discarded his frame. So from the avatar's point of view, actually, you know, it's that line which we call as, you know, in the body and not in the body is actually very, very thin, so thin that it's negligible from his point of view. But we are so obsessed that we're thinking that, you know, Krishna is not there. What will happen now? You know, he is gone. Why did he do like this? And our approach to the avatar is what is causing the whole problem, I feel. And we forget that, oh, now I will not get it anymore, right? And that's what one of the seniors I remember coming and telling that, see, all those things that mattered when Swami was there have not gone away. That he still loves you, you still love him, and what matters is still there. So what is gone is probably what is meant to go at some time or the other, right?
As you said, what has gone is what was meant to go, but even then, you know, it hits when it happens. And that is what happens to Arjuna also, because you see Arjuna beautifully clarifying to Yudhishthira and answering all his doubts, but at the end of it, Arjuna simply goes and falls in Yudhishthira's laps and cries, and he says, you know, oh, brother, you know, all my skills, all my abilities, everything is useless. I'm good for nothing, and you know, everything has deserted me. And it's really shocking, because on one hand you're seeing all the wisdom that he's exuding, but in the next moment he's so weak and he's crying like a baby. And so all said and done, when the physical departure actually happens, it is indeed a very, very heady blow that hits at the detachment or vairagya or equanimity and kshama of even the most thorough spiritual aspirant.
And you know, from where this concept, lamentation of Arjuna comes, he says that I am weak, because he's been saying that, you know, now when you look at the whole thing, you realize that nobody is the doer, nobody is cruel, nobody is the champion, nobody is the one who is the hero who is undefeatable. Because he suddenly feels, I mean, and he says that the episode which happened after this is actually proof of that, because he is saying that I realized that all this while I was thinking I am the ace archer, I am the prince, I am the one who is, you know, who is a lion in the battle. And suddenly he says that I realized that I was only a receptacle into which God decided to pour this talent. And with him the talent went. Probably just to show this fact that, you know, you were only a receptacle and you have no claim over the talent which you had. And that's why he says that I realized that what happened after that to me is a proof of this fact that God alone is the doer and we are actually nothings. And that is when Yudhishthira suddenly wakes up and he says, what more is there? You know, is there more disastrous news than you've already given us?
You know, I think this is actually the point in time when we should take a little break, recoup ourselves. But the point you made, it reminded me of something poignant, again related to Bhagwan's leaving. You say, see, Arjuna was a very, very lucky and blessed soul. That is the reason the physical departure of Krishna made him realize that, you know what, I am not the doer. I am nothing. Actually, the Lord was everything, and possibly whatever little trace of ego he had till then, all that seemed to vanish with the physical disappearance of the Lord. Blessed are such souls, because when we look at the physical departure of Bhagwan, of course, this is not to judge anybody or anything, but I think we can use this as a benchmark to judge ourselves. How was our response when Swami physically has left? Is our response like Arjuna, wherein we realize that, you know, we are nothing. The Lord is everything. We are nobody. We are nothing. Or is our response the direct opposite? Has it led to an increase in our ego, where with the departure of Bhagwan, we feel that, you know what, I am the most blessed one. I am the one actually, even going to a level where saying that I have actually guided Bhagwan, I am equal to Bhagwan. You know, we see all these things happening. It's almost like when there is a, you know, we call them as opportunistic vultures. You know? Any opportunity anything is seen as an opportunity. And sadly, there are a few among us who have utilized even Bhagwan's departure from the physical as an opportunity to pounce on like hungry vultures. So, instead of feeling like Arjuna, that we are nobody, it's the Lord who is everybody, and being humbled, it has led to a growth in ego where we feel that, you know, Bhagwan possibly occupied a weak body, Bhagwan was not able to do such things, and that is why we are necessary, we are the ones who will be doing. So I think in the Bhagavata Vahini, at a very subtle level, this, I feel Bhagwan's message, that I feel is the sukshma sharira of Bhagwan, that I feel is the subtle body of Bhagwan, in the sense, it is all there, all the messages are there for us. When the time is ripe, we will be able to dig and reveal it to ourselves. This was the thought that came when you were speaking about how Arjuna felt humbled. I feel, if not anything else, the least that Bhagwan's physical departure should do to us is to humble us into realizing that he is the one, he is the sutradhari, he is the patradhari, although he is doing everything, we are just mere instruments. On that thought, I think we will take a little break. On the other side of the break, we will continue with the reason why Arjuna is even more feeling sad and he's shedding tears, because other than Krishna's departure, there are other bad news also that he wishes to convey.
तेरे सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है, तुझको मेरा प्रणाम।
तेरे सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है, तुझको मेरा प्रणाम।
तेरे सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है, तुझको मेरा प्रणाम।
तेरे सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है, तुझको मेरा प्रणाम।
तुझको मेरा प्रणाम ओ साईं बाबा, तुझको मेरा प्रणाम। तुझको मेरा प्रणाम साईं बाबा, तुझको मेरा प्रणाम।
तुझको मेरा प्रणाम साईं बाबा, तुझको मेरा प्रणाम।
मुरली मनोहर आशान तोड़ो,
मुरली मनोहर आशान तोड़ो,
मुरली मनोहर आशान तोड़ो,
मुरली मनोहर आशान तोड़ो।
दुख भंजन मेरा साथ न छोड़ो, छोड़ो
जन मेरा साथ न छोड़ो।
द्वार खड़ा हूँ मैं दुखियारा,
द्वार खड़ा हूँ मैं दुखियारा,
द्वार खड़ा हूँ मैं दुखियारा, सुन ले मेरी पुकार,
सुन ले मेरी पुकार ओ साईं बाबा, सुन ले मेरी पुकार।
सुन ले मेरी पुकार ओ साईं बाबा, सुन ले मेरी पुकार, प्रभु कोई नहीं है, तुझको मेरा प्रणाम।
तेरे सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है, तुझको मेरा प्रणाम।
तुझको मेरा प्रणाम ओ साईं बाबा, तुझको मेरा प्रणाम।
तुझको मेरा प्रणाम।
आशान तोड़ो
मुरली मनोहर आशान तोड़ो
दुख भंजन मेरा साथ न छोड़ो
भंजन मेरा साथ न छोड़ो
द्वार खड़ा हूँ मैं दुखिया बाबा सुन ले मेरी पुकार
सुन ले मेरी पुकार हो साईं बाबा सुन ले मेरी पुकार
सुन ले मेरी पुकार हो साईं बाबा सुन ले मेरी पुकार तेरे सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है तुझको मेरा प्रणाम
वेलकम बैक टू लिसनर्स वी आर अबाउट टू एक्सप्लेन अबाउट नरेट दैट इंसिडेंट विच अर्जुना वाज गोइंग टू टेल युधिष्ठिरा अबाउट what happened after this incident because they are witnessing what the emotional up and down which Arjuna himself is going through and even as this being narrated all the brothers are shedding copious tears and we spoke about how the moment the news was broken I think Nakula or Sahadeva goes and closes all the doors. I mean instantly they actually go into a period of mourning. As we later come to know, they don't eat dinner that night, they don't sleep that night. So the moment the news is broken, the doors are shut, nobody is allowed inside that chamber where the five brothers are. And all of them are really distraught at this moment. And when Arjuna says that something happened even after the most saddest event happened, because this also explains why Arjuna did not end his life along with them. Because, you know, the whole of... almost the entire Yadava clan was decimated. And it was quite natural that probably Arjuna would have at least given a thought to that, right? If not anything else, at least given a thought to put an end to his own suffering by joining the Lord. So what he says after that is probably going to give an idea to these people what happened after that which made Arjuna stick on to his life and even come thus far.
And Arjuna, as you said, the first reaction when he gets to hear of Krishna's physical passing, very similar to most of our situations, who were in Puttaparthi, I mean, because Arjuna says that I was in Dwarka, I was at the very residence where the Lord was, and yet I was not there when this happened. And that was the situation for most of us, because a handful alone were possibly at the hospital where Bhagwan decided to leave the physical at the super speciality hospital in the temple of healing that he himself had built. So Arjuna was so depressed and he says that I wanted to commit suicide. I just wanted to end my life. He doesn't say I wanted to commit suicide, but I wanted to end my life, you know, splitting my head into two with my bow or just jumping into the sea and drowning myself. I had no more interest to live because my life force was already gone. What is the use of this body? He said, precisely that time, Daruka, the, am I right? Is it Daruka?
Right.
Yeah. Daruka, the charioteer for Lord Krishna, comes to Arjuna and says that here is a message from Lord Krishna. He comes with a written material. And Arjuna actually very gingerly and very tenderly pulls out this note for all the Pandavas to see, and the note goes something like this, that Arjuna, I'm leaving, I have already left, I have completed my task and I am going back to my home, my eternal home. In 7 days from now, Dwarka will be under attack from the sea. Except for my house, everything will be destroyed, all will be gone. Now, here is what I want you to do. I want you to protect my people. The women, the children and the old people. What about the men? Krishna already knows, because he has been present when all the men destroyed themselves at the Prabhasa Seashore, at Prabhasa Kshetra. So he says, the remaining old people, the children and the women, I want you to take them. Take them along with you to Indraprastha, protect them, take care of them, because Dwarka will be gone. They are people who are dear to me. You take care of them. This is the responsibility I'm assigning to you, you know. And so Arjuna says that it is only for this reason, only for this reason that I did not end my life and I decided to do as per what the Lord has said. And again, you know, when you draw parallels, I think it was precisely this kind of feeling that there is a task that Swami has given each one of us that we have to fulfill. That was the only thing that kept us from collapsing into, if not suicidal thoughts, at least thoughts of deepest depression and thoughts of not wanting to do anything. Because I am sure that many of us went through a period where we didn't have the interest to do anything. And one of the major reasons why we came out of that period of not wanting to do anything was simply because this is something that the Lord has entrusted me to do. And for the Lord's sake, to show, this is the only way I can show my love to the Lord, I will do it. So it was that same sense of responsibility and loyalty towards Lord Krishna that Arjuna decided not to end his life and carry out his word orders to the world.
And I don't know how many listeners really appreciate what was the emotion that we're talking about. You know, definitely hundreds and millions of people had a lot of love for Swami. The devotion was always there. I mean, this is not a question, the devotion of the devotees who are listening to us speak, but the fact is, our attachment to Swami was a little more than just devotion, if you can put it that way. Because, you know, he was part of our schedule. Our schedule was around him. You know, our day would not end if we had not seen Swami. Our day started in the mandir, ended in the mandir. It was, our dinner time would depend on when Swami would come and take aarti. You know,
our sleeping time would depend on the program.
Everything else. So it was not just, you know, Swami physically withdrawing himself. It was not merely what would happen to a devotee losing their God. You know, that, if that is a disaster, which is unspeakable of. And that was mixed with so much of our physical attachment to Swami and the change that it brought, the way our lives would completely change. You know, physically our lives would change. I would say this to a lot of people, you know, because they, for many of them, they had come to terms with Swami's omnipresence in a very sweet way, because they would come see Swami once a month or once a year. Some of the people abroad would come and see. And then they would go back and live with Swami's omnipresence all their life. But we had the advantage, and later which itself became the disadvantage.
I think for us it was the reverse. Mm-hmm. Once in a while we would go out of Prashanti and we would live with Swami's omnipresence.
Right.
Rest of the time we were in the physical presence.
Right. And that changed, right? Because that was one way the Pandava brothers were able to sympathize with Arjuna, because Arjuna had lived for a very long period in the presence of Krishna, and he was going through this thing. It was a little different from their own grief too. And that is why, you know, when Arjuna says that I wanted to end my life, and when we all felt the same way, you know, and the fact that a task was given, because that was the different thing, because each one of us had been given a task in some way or the other, or being told that this is your course of action till further instructions are given. I think most of us were like that, you know, we were all given a certain instruction to carry out in our life, to say that unless the change is brought in, this is what you'll do for the rest of your life. And that was literally, had literally bound us to not our lives or our work which we're doing, but had bound us to Swami's word. And that was in many ways which had stopped us from doing anything drastic. And precisely what Arjuna was saying, that probably Krishna knew that, you know, Krishna knew that this was going to happen. Krishna knew that Dwarka is going to go. Krishna also knew that Arjuna is going to be given a task which he is not going to accomplish. But still Arjuna was given the task, because not because the task was important, but the task was important for Arjuna to keep him, you know, together till probably at least he goes to the brothers and gives them the news. Right?
And as you said, Krishna knew that Arjuna would not be successful in the task, because Arjuna narrates, you know, this is what hits him even more, that one responsibility that Krishna gave him, he failed in that. He narrates, he says that, see, we completed the last rites of all the people who had died, and then we left Dwarka. We traveled a lot till we reached Panchanada, in modern day Punjab, where, you know, there was the flooded river and we didn't feel it would be safe to cross the flooded river in the late evening, and therefore for the first time we camped, actually we stopped there. And when they broke their halt, when they broke their journey to resume it the next day, hopefully when the flooded river has abated, that is when Arjuna goes to the river and he's doing his ablutions, when he hears shrieks and cries, and he comes to know that at night forest dwelling nomads and barbarians have actually attacked the camp. And he rushes and he sees that all the residents of Dwarka are in pain, are in agony, they are being kidnapped, the queens are being taken away, and everybody is being looted. These are people dear to Krishna and they are his responsibility. And he sees that this is happening, he shouts out to them, he says, "You barbarians, stop doing what you are doing. Do you know whom you are, whose protection they are under? They are under the protection of Arjuna. You know, I am the son of the mighty Pandava, I am one of the mighty Pandavas, who has annihilated, who has actually killed people as great as Bhishma, Drona, you know, all the commander-in-chiefs of the Kaurava army were actually killed by Arjuna. He was responsible for their downfall. So such a great warrior, he possibly felt that just an introduction of who is there might scare them out of their wits. But that doesn't seem to happen. The barbarians seem to be going about in gay abandon, you know, in some kind of confidence, some kind of misplaced confidence or whatever, you know, they are going about. And Arjuna then decides that it is time to teach them a lesson, and he says, "I picked up my Gandiva," and then he begins to wail and he says, "Brother, I couldn't recollect a single mantra, I couldn't recollect a single thing with which I could hit them," you know. And he says, on one side this sorrow of the loss of Krishna was so deep, and I don't know, possibly it wiped out my memory, everything. That's why I say my skills, my abilities, all mean nothing. All have gone along with Krishna. And he says, like a mute spectator, I watched. I shot a few arrows, I hurled a few maces, I took with a sword, I tried some fighting. But most of the people dear to the Lord, most of the residents of Dwarka were plundered and looted and kidnapped. And there was nothing I could do. You know, Prem, honestly speaking, yesterday when I was reading this part, I got of tears in my eyes, because I felt this is so similar to what happened, you know. I felt, I don't know if I was being over assumptuous or I was being proud or egoistic, but I really felt that we who are working here as Bhagwan staff, we who are here as Swami students, we were all like Arjuna's, you know, when Bhagwan left physically. We were fully weakened. We were fully weakened. We felt drained of all our energy. And the only reason, as you said, we continue to do what we are supposed to do is because this is what the Lord has told us to do. And at that point in time, it was seeing the letter of Krishna. It felt similar. It was almost like Swami saying that Prashanti will be attacked. You know, like how he said Dwarka will be attacked, Prashanti will be attacked. Except my house, everything will collapse. And it was almost like he told us that you have to take care of the people who live in Prashanti Nilayam. And when he says people who live in Prashanti Nilayam, it's not those who only physically live in Prashanti Nilayam. It is those who consider Prashanti as their home, because Swami is their divine parent. It was almost like Swami said that to us. And just like Krishna knew that Arjuna is going to fail, it is almost like Swami knew that we are going to fail, because we failed. Because barbarians attacked Prashanti Nilayam. Barbarians and nomads attacked all the people who were dear to Swami. Literally looted them, plundered them, took away all the wealth. And even kidnapped them, hijacked them. Precisely what Swami said. You know, when I hear Brother Satyajit speaking of how three, four days after Bhagwan left the physical, he was approached by Narasimurthy sir and told that you come to Mudenalli, I will make you head these organization institutions. I felt there couldn't have been a more barbaric thing to do, you know. At that vulnerable moment. And Arjuna goes on to say that all the people, all the queens, they are calling out, "Arjuna, why did you get us? Why did you bring us here? We should have died there only. No, we should have died with our Krishna. Is this to suffer this insufferable shame and agony that You brought us. Please protect us. Do something. Why are you not doing anything? And Arjuna says, what could I do? I could not do anything. I just stood as a mute spectator. What could I do? And personally, Prem, I'm sure you also, most of us received so many mails saying, why are you not doing anything? Swami's legacy is being looted. Swami's people are being plundered. They're being led. They're being kidnapped. They're being hijacked. Literally, you know, metaphorically, this is what was happening. Why are you not doing anything? And what to say? What to say, Prem? Like mute spectators, we stood. We stood just like Arjuna, how he had to stand. Because, yes, ultimately it was a master plan, but at a physical level, on one side we have all been drained by the physical absence that was, as you said, part of our daily schedule. On the other hand, possibly that is the mistake that we did. Like Arjuna, we forgot, and maybe we should not excuse ourselves thinking that we were in such distress, so we are allowed to forget. We should never forget Swami's words. We should never forget what he has stood for. Possibly in that moment of weakness, we just forgot and we stood as mute spectators. But as I said, seeing the happenings and how Swami himself has written it in the Bhagavatam, it just makes me feel a little strengthened that at least we are in elite company. At least we are in the company of the mighty Pandavas, and if they could be helpless, it is not surprising that all of us were also helpless. And it only gives us inspiration that let us read ahead. Let us go ahead and see how the Pandavas took it upon themselves to come out of the situation, because that will serve as inspiration for us also.
And when talk about Arjuna forgetting the whole thing, I mean, as you were just saying some time back, the other thing is, here is Arjuna who is probably, you know, lost the ability to think on his feet, in a sense. Has it born out of that obedience? Has it born out of always being under the command of the Lord? I think many times that's what happened to most of us, you know, when you're talking about what's happening in the Sai family itself. See, we have been trained by Swami to completely ignore and overlook every time some attack happened on Swami, you know, in the form of any number of people who spoke ill of Swami. And that's how Swami has trained us, literally, you know, be it in the 70s when there was intellectuals started saying that Swami's miracles were fake, and in the 90s whatever happened, and every time when there was a major attack on Swami and Swami's name and fame, Swami would literally stand there as a person with all his dignity. We had to stand under that dignity, right? He was literally the umbrella which was, the dignity umbrella which was, we were all standing under the shade of that. We had to toe the line according to what Swami wanted it. And we thought that that is the best way to respond all the time. But here the thing which was happening, and the other thing which we have also noticed in Swami, is Swami's silence was only when he was attacked. The moment you start throwing aspersions against anybody who belongs to Swami, the way Swami will respond will be totally different.
Oh, yes.
And a case in point is, I think, during the Christmas when Swami celebrated in Vrindavan. The year 2000, right? If I'm not mistaken. The way Swami thundered from that podium when there were some, rumors being spread about students. The way Swami spoke, I mean, it was scary even for us to listen to as students. Probably that's what we forgot, right? We forgot that what was being attacked is not literally Swami, it was Swami's devotees who were being attacked. And even today, our response should be for that. Somebody, the legacy which was dear to Swami, the philosophy which was so dear to Swami, and you know, what Swami taught was not charity. What Swami taught was how charity has to be done. What Swami taught was not good work. He says, what is really good work? You know, the essence of good work is what Swami taught. And all that is being attacked, and I think that is why we should get up and say that, no, this is wrong, this is unacceptable. And that was what, we probably have been a little slack, we probably have been a little slow at, coming to the defense.
But in all this, what actually touches us and moves us a lot is the compassion of the Lord, the karuna of the Lord, you know, the love of the Lord. As you said, Krishna knew that Arjuna will fail in protecting his legacy. Krishna knew that Arjuna will fail in safeguarding the people dearest to him. And definitely Swami also knew that, possibly as a community of Swami students or as a community of students who are working for Bhagwan at Prashanthi Nilayam, we would fail in this first round, but his compassion is that Swami gives so many chances. Swami gives so many more opportunities, and as long as we look at each failure as a stepping stone, learn from that the way Arjuna did, I think that is something to look forward to. Arjuna says to his brothers, you know, I was like a defanged snake. I was like a toothless and clawless lion. The queens were all wailing, and they were asking, is this what you do? You are not able to protect us. Are you deaf to our cries? Will you simply hand us over to the brigands and do nothing? You know, each of those sentences, you know, it strikes so hardly, blows in the heart. And you are able to 100% empathize with the helplessness of Arjuna. And logically, when I'm thinking as to what is the reason for this helplessness, as you rightly said, Swami has always been the person who dictates what we do, and we simply and blindly follow what he says. It is so tough to suddenly adjust from being a person who executes to being a person who decides and then executes. And I think in that itself, Swami is giving us a message that till now, you would wait and you would write a letter and wait if needed for days, weeks, months before taking your decision. Because you wanted Swami to give you the decision. And as you said, there are things that have changed, there are things that have not changed. That thing has not changed. Even now, continue to wait. Wait and get in touch with Swami. It would look like Swami is easily available, right? Swami is always available. Every day he comes for darshan. But still you knew that at a practical level, you would have to wait to get your opportunity, and that opportunity might take hours, days, weeks, months, years. Same way Swami was saying that, you know, that Lord is available always. In your heart he is there. 24 hours he is there. But you will have to wait. You will have to wait possibly hours, days, weeks, months, years to get in touch. Prem, see, you have waited. You have waited for 7 years. So you know what, possibly more, I don't know. You have waited for years and you know what it means to wait. Let me straight away ask you. If somebody had come and told you that, you know, you have waited 7 days, it's okay. This is what you do. Swami will be happy. Would you have accepted that? I mean, would you have accepted that? You would not be satisfied with second and third and fourth and anything. You want it from Swami. And if it takes 7 years, so be it. I feel that is the thing that Swami was pointing and saying, that you try to get it back in touch and wait and do it in the same manner as you are doing, because that is something that has not changed. The way you pray to me and the way I will respond has not changed at all. Physically things come and go, but this bandham, that this relationship that we have, spreads across lifetimes. In previous lifetimes when you loved me, I was not there physically on the earth. So it has been fostered in across many lifetimes where the Lord was not physically on the earth. This is one lifetime, a very rare opportunity that you got a chance to get physically in touch. But that is not the beginning nor the end of the relationship. And I think that is a lesson that we have to drill down into our heads and deep into our hearts.
Absolutely. You know, I always think of it this way. We've all gone through, we've studied science in school, and we always have these practical classes, right? And we would study something in the classroom, and we would go to the lab, and there we would see these things demonstrated in the physics lab. You know, how absurd it would be for us to say that these laws of physics work only in the physics lab. Now I go to the biology lab, the laws of physics will not work. Now it's the laws of, you know, biology. Or I go to the chemistry class and now I see only the laws of chemistry working. I mean, laws of physics are universal. It will happen anywhere. If you're in America, if you're in India, wherever it is. The lab is only a place where it can be demonstrated. There are mechanisms by which the law of gravity is demonstrated, the law of velocity or viscosity or whatever it is. You have contraptions which enable you to see it in action. And that's precisely what happens when an avatar comes. These are universal laws. It happens across time, you know, from the beginning of time till the end of time. But when the avatar comes, he creates a lab-like situation where he demonstrates that this is how it works. This is how you pray. This is how it response comes. This is how you do good work, and this is how the Lord responds to that. And this is how you do nonsense, and this is how you get reprimanded for that. You know, we've seen everything in a concise time form, right? And probably, I mean, it's wrong for us to pass judgment on somebody like Arjuna. Probably what he missed out was that idea that even now the Lord is the same way with me as he was with me in the chariot when he was driving and I was sitting behind. And when you forget that, I think that is when you suddenly find yourself going weak. Because what happens next, you know, after this whole episode, we'll come to that. The way the Pandavas respond is no less than the way they responded when Krishna was guiding them. The preciseness with which they were taking decisions and they were going about their work was actually reminding people of when they were acting under the command of, Krishna. Because that is what happens with devotion. You know, you probably are a little bit shaken when the disaster happens, but when you gather yourself, you realize that your actions are precisely the way you would have done under the command of Swami.
You were saying how, you know, these laws hold good anytime, any place, always. In the discourse on the Vijayadashmi day in the year 2007, you know, Swami delivered it in Sai Kulwant Hall. Suddenly Swami began to make a reference to the passing of Shirdi Baba, because Shirdi Baba left on the Vijayadashmi day. And when he made reference to that, that is when he said this very statement that the laws hold good for everybody. Everybody, be it the body of the avatar also, there it has come, and it's not like the body will stay forever. The body will leave. In fact, I think at this point in time, we will play that precise discourse clip, and listening to it in Swami's voice is such a thrilling experience. We will continue after this clip.
As you leave this body,
Shirdi lo.
As the body is given up there in Shirdi,
Ninadu Dasami.
This day it had happened.
Udre samayam lo cheppadu.
While giving up the body, he said,
ee dehanu aadharanga pettukokandi.
Don't consider this body as the main and chief one.
Konni nimishal lopala idi maadipothundi.
Within a couple of minutes, the body will disappear.
Kanuka, ilanti daanini meeru enduku satyanga bhavistharu?
Why do you consider this body as truth or
evaru kantidaru kaachadi?
No one should cry, no one should shed a tear.
Idi sahajamainatuvantidi.
And this is what will happen usually.
Unnanta varaku anubhavinchandi.
Experience and enjoy so long this body is available to you.
Tadapari idantha oka swapnamuga bhavinchandi.
Later consider this all as a dream.
The dream.
All a dream.
ఇది కొంతకాలం మాత్రమే ఆ విధంగా ఉంటుంటది.
ఇట్ విల్ రిమైన్ లైక్ దట్ ఫర్ సమ్ టైమ్.
కనుక
దెర్ఫోర్
తాను పోయిన తర్వాత
ఆఫ్టర్ హి లెఫ్ట్ ది బాడీ
3 దినములు ఆ దేహాన్ని పెట్టారు.
ది బాడీ వాస్ కెప్ట్ లైక్ దట్ ఫర్ 3 డేస్.
కాని తిరిగి వస్తాడో ఏమో అని చాలా కాచుకున్నారు.
దే వర్ ఆల్ వెయిటింగ్ దట్ హి మే కమ్ బ్యాక్ సమ్ టైమ్.
తర్వాత అబ్దుల్ ఖాన్
లేటర్ ది అబ్దుల్ ఖాన్
వచ్చి ఇంతకాలం చెప్పినటువంటి మనం మర్చిపోతున్నాం.
సెడ్ దట్ వీ హావ్ బీన్ ఫర్గెటింగ్ వాట్ ఆల్ బాబా మెన్షన్ టు అస్ సో లాంగ్.
బాబా చెప్పినటువంటి వాక్యమే సత్యవాక్యం.
వాట్ బాబా సెడ్ ఇస్ ట్రూత్.
దానిని మనం అనుసరిస్తాం.
లెట్ అస్ ఫాలో వాట్ హీ సెడ్.
కనుక దీన్ని మనం చేయవలసిన క్రియలు చేర్చాలి.
Therefore we should follow the normal routine, the procedure that we have to do as the body is left.
అప్పుడే చావిట్లో నుంచి
is only then from చావిడి
తీసుకుని పోయి చావిట్లో నుంచి బాడీని తీసుకుని పోయి సమాధి.
It is only then the body was buried there, సమాధి.
కనుక ఎంతకాలం ఉన్నప్పటికీ దేహాలు ఎప్పటికీ ఆశాసిస్తాయి.
హౌ లాంగ్ వన్ మే లివ్ ద బాడీ ఇస్ స్టిల్ టెంపరరీ.
దేహానికి ఒక లిమిట్ వస్తుంది.
ద బాడీ హ్యాస్ సర్టన్ లిమిటేషన్.
ఈ దేహమునకు ప్రతి దేహమునకు ఒక్కొక్క పరిమితం ఉంటుంది.
దిస్ బాడీ ఎవ్రీ లిమ్ ఎవ్రీ సెన్స్ ఫర్ దట్ మ్యాటర్ హ్యాస్ ఎ లిమిట్.
ఆ లిమిట్ దాటి అది పోవడానికి వీలు లేదు.
Nothing can go beyond the limits.
అట్నే ప్రతి దేహమునకును ఒక పరిమితం ఉంటుండాలి.
Likewise, everybody is under limits.
తినాలు జరిగే కొరది సమీపాలు అవుతున్నాయి దానికి.
As days pass on, the end is fast approaching.
కనుక ప్రేమ స్వరూపులారా,
embodiments of love,
ఈ ప్రేమను ప్రధానంగా పెట్టుకోండి.
Keep love as most important fundamental principle.
సత్యమును ప్రేమలో నింపుకోండి.
Fill your hearts with the principle of truth.
ఏ పని చేసినప్పటికీ ధర్మరీతిగా మీరు చేయండి.
Whatever you do, let it be righteous, full of dharma.
ఈ ధర్మమే ఈ సత్యమును కాపాడుతుంది, సత్యమే ధర్మమును పోషిస్తుంది.
Therefore, dharma action must be supported by truth, and it is the truth that safeguards, protects the dharma or action.
So, welcome back, dear listeners. You know, when you hear that discourse clip, you almost wonder what Swami is talking about. If not Swami mentioning Shirdi Baba, it's almost like Swami is narrating what will happen 4 years from now, 4 years from the date, that is 2007, where Swami says that for 3 days they keep the body and they are hoping that he will come back, but that is not going to happen. It is nature, it is, you should continue with your duties, perform the final rites as prescribed. You know, that's what Swami is saying. That is what the message that was given you. Please do that as it is, and instead of mourning over the body, follow his words. And Swami says how satya and dharma is what we should always follow. So it is not as if, you know, it feels very nice when you see these kind of discourses where Swami is making silent and gentle references to what is about to happen, because it reassures us that it was not a sudden thing that happened. Like how people would have wondered, how could Krishna be killed by a bow, arrow hitting his foot? How is this possible? The Krishna who has come unscathed from the Kurukshetra war. So in the same way, if we think that how is it Swami suddenly left like multi-organ failure? These are just excuses that the avatar chooses to leave. And when we go back and revisit the avatar's lifetime and see what all he has spoken, we realize, when we see that he has given these kind of indications, of course at a personal level, through dreams, through visions, many people got different indications, and one by one after the Mahasamadhi they have come out and shared. That's a different thing. But even at a very public level, like that namaskar that Swami did on the 20th of March, you know, like almost bidding goodbye, so many things at a public level Swami has done to show that me leaving my physical is a part of the master plan, a well thought out decision. Because years before, you know, and at this point I'm just reminded of what one of the brothers who stayed with Swami was saying, that in 2003, in the middle of the night, Swami calls him and tells him to sit on his own bed. And he says, no Swami, I'm fine down, I'll sit at your feet. He says, no, sit on my bed. And then asks him, tell me what will happen to you when I leave the physical? And he says, Swami, you don't talk like this, because it's not going to happen. He thought Swami was in a melancholic mood because he had just undergone the surgery and all that. He said, so don't worry Swami, you will get healed fast, you will be able to run fast and all this. He's trying to boost up Swami's spirits. Swami says, no, I don't need all this. Just answer my question, come to the point. What will happen to you when I leave? And he says, Swami, I'll be gone. I'll be devastated. I won't have any reason to live. I'll be totally gone. You know, this is what he told Swami. And it's very important to note what Swami said. Swami said, I know, and that's why I will prepare you for it. And, you know, surprisingly, a few months after that, this brother was told to leave Prashant Nilayam. He has been living with Swami physically for years, and suddenly he has been told to leave. And so many things happened. Later got married, has a child, and so many things. And recently when he had come to Prashanti, he was narrating how actually Swami has ensured that he didn't collapse. He's telling, had I continued to be with Swami, surely I would have died of a stroke. I would have gone the instant I got to know this. But apparently that is not yet time ready for me to leave. So Swami has some plans for me, which I don't know, which is evolving as life goes by. But he says, one thing I can definitely say, that Swami kept up his word. He said, I will prepare you before that happens. It has taken him 8 years of preparations. But, you know, when he narrated this, it only brought joy to my heart that it was not some sudden thing that multi-organ failure happened. As back as 2003 itself, Swami is making references to his leaving and how he will prepare. So it's all part of the master plan, and this discourse is yet another instance of such a kind of master plan in action.
And you know, in this point in the Bhagavatam, we're seeing that Arjuna has finished his narration. He has said that this is what has happened, and this is what is my conclusion. He says that I feel that all my strength has left me. I mean, it's no point in me calling myself a warrior or calling myself a great archer or whatever it is, because I'm not any of that. Mm-hmm. With Krishna, all of that has gone. And now it's the turn for the next Pandava brother, who is considered to be one of their power centers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bhima is one who is really distraught. He starts crying, and in fact, Yudhishthira looks at him and feels that, you know, there's something going to go wrong with him. Literally, it's like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've always seen that, you know, someone who's very, very brave and very, very strong, if they break down, you get really scared.
You get shaken up,
yes. You get, if such a person is, and that's what Yudhishthira feels.
Sorry to interrupt you, Prem. I'm telling, the first time when we saw Swami publicly become emotional, that is what actually shook us, because for us, Swami is like the pillar of strength. I don't think in my life till that day, possibly in 2000 or 2001, I had ever seen, you know, Swami even being emotional, you know. So when a tear actually came, that was during the Gram Seva time,
right.
That was a kind of feeling. And yeah, I can totally understand when you say the kind of feeling that goes through you when somebody whom you consider as the most powerful is seemingly breaking down.
Right, and that's what happens. And Bhima's we know the character of Bhima, you know, very, very expressive, whatever is the situation.
Hmm.
So he is very expressively showing his depression, and Yudhishthira gets very scared. He goes up to him and tries to console Bhima a little bit.
Hmm.
And that's when Bhima says that, you know, brother, same is the case with me. You know, if it's happened with Arjuna, the same is the case with Bhima and his might too. The might has already left, and there's no point in me living. Give me permission. I want to go to the forest and immolate myself and put an end to this, this agony which I'm undergoing.
Mm.
And when all of this is happening, that's when Sahadeva gets up and starts reminding all of them about an episode which happened and what Krishna himself narrated during that episode.
And he makes reference to the time when Krishna had gone as a messenger of peace to the Hastinapur court. And at that point in time, what would have happened is the Kauravas put forth an argument telling that Krishna is being unfair because he is related to both the Kauravas and Pandavas. He is as dear to the Kauravas as he is to the Pandavas, and therefore he should not take the side of the Pandavas. At that time, you know, in a kind of a rage almost, with a very upset face and an angry face, Krishna responds. And Krishna would have told, what do you mean by saying that the Kauravas and the Pandavas are the same for me? He says, the Pandavas are part of me. Yudhishthira is my head. Arjuna is my arms. Bhima is the trunk. And Nakula Sahadeva, the twins, are my legs. So Krishna is like the heart of the body that is composed of the Pandavas. And so Sahadeva says that, see, that is what it is. What we are feeling now is a very natural thing because our heart has left. And Sahadeva says that, you know, when life leaves a body, for some time the body is still warm and all the limbs and all seem to be as they were when they're alive. It'll take a little time and then it'll go. So he says that when Krishna has left, we should look at this as Krishna beckoning us to join him. It's only a matter of time before we will get our merger in him. We will be joining him. So instead of mourning and spending our time in sorrow, I think we should spend our time in preparation for our ultimate merger in Krishna.
Right, and then it's at this point that Nakula gets up and he reminds them that, you know, our first duty is to inform the others, because till now, more importantly, Mother Kunti has not been informed, and they suddenly, you know, another wave of shock. What would be her response? How will she take the news? Because, you know, when you're talking about Kunti, she's very, very aged at this point. You know, when you go through the story, I think we don't realize. We imagine all of them being the same throughout the Mahabharata,
yeah.
Right? But she's actually very old. And in fact, later Swami says that how she's confined to her room and her bed, and she's dependent on her servants for all of her needs. And they have to go and tell her this news. So they decide that Arjuna and Yudhishthira would go to her as soon as you know, the dawn breaks.
Mm.
And we will see, and slowly the other queens will be informed about the news.
See, though Krishna told Arjuna that you take all the people of Dwarka with you to Indraprastha, Arjuna would have actually come to Hastinapur, because that is where Yudhishthira is. Originally, the thing was, Hastinapura was being ruled by the Kauravas and Indraprastha by the Pandavas. But now that the Kauravas are decimated, Yudhishthira was shuttling back and forth between Hastinapura and Indraprastha. So Kunti is at Indraprastha, the queens are at Indraprastha. At Hastinapura. So Arjuna, following Krishna's command, whomever few he has been able to save, he leaves them at Indraprastha, and he would have come to Hastinapura, and all this is happening at Hastinapura. Another reason why the Pandavas, they feel that they have to inform Kunti is because usually when Arjuna has come back, the first thing he would have done is to go to Kunti, mother Kunti, his mother, and he would have told. So they know that she will be expecting. On top of that, there is this Vajra. Vajra is the only Yadava male who has survived the calamity at Prabhasa Kshetra, and he has come out alive. And Vajra has actually reached Hastinapura, and so they are also sure that Vajra's arrival at Hastinapura would have raised a few eyebrows, wondering what is this happening, where are the others, why only he alone. And whenever they have asked Vajra anything, Vajra has gone into solitary confinement and he is not talking to anybody. He seems to be in a kind of a depression. So this will further add to the intensity and waiting impatience of the people. And that is why the Pandavas feel that yes, as soon as daybreak, we should go and tell. Little do they realize that they needn't have waited for daybreak, because Kunti too in her chambers has not slept throughout the night. She has kept awake whole night worrying.
Right. And what happens when Kunti is given the news? I think we'll come to that in the next episode, because that again spirals a series of events which will literally bring down the curtains to the Krishna episode. Because if Krishna stood in the court of Hastinapur and said that, you know, in the body, I am the heart, and these are the limbs, even the story of Krishna is not complete until all of these stories come to an end. The stories of the Pandavas themselves come to an end.
Mm.
So that we will leave for the next week. And dear listeners, I hope you all would have relived with us as we were going through this.
More importantly, episode. I feel, you know, as we draw closer to Swami's Aradhana Day, these are things that we have to keep in mind, because just as birth is an inevitable part of life, death too is an inevitable part of life. And as Swami says, the arrival and departure has already been written. What is in our hands is the life in between. And seeking inspiration from the birth of the avatar, seeking inspiration from the departure of the avatar, and seeking inspiration from the way avatar led his life when he was in the physical, I think we should model our lives along his life, so that our lives also become his message. And I think it is very appropriate, and I'm really grateful to Swami for making this in such a manner that this episode comes to discussion just days before, on the eve of the Aradhana Mahotsavam. I think we should enter the Aradhana Mahotsavam with these thoughts, praying to Swami for strength, for love, for guidance that he has been giving always, you know. And when we pray to him for this, it is not as if we are praying because he is not giving it to us. We are praying because it reassures us that we are receiving it. He will always give us. We only have to seek from our heart for our own satisfaction. That's it. So seeking for his love, his grace, and offering this segment humbly and with all gratitude at his lotus feet, we will conclude this week's satsang with a song, on the other side of which, as always, there will be the segment Love to Love by Brother Chandu Vijay. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
Mohabbat ki kami dil mein agar ehsaas hota hai, zara jhaanko to paoge ki saai paas hota hai. O karishma ye usi ka hai, ki duniya khoob surat lagti hai warna aadmi ko aadmi kya raas hota hai. Sai bin raha na jaye, Sai bin raha na jaye, Sai bin raha na jaye, Chain na aaye mohe, chain na aaye. चैन नाए मोहे चैन नाए साई बिन रहा न जाए साई बिन रहा जब से देखा तुझको साई मेरे दर्श के प्यासे नैना सांझ सवेरे जब से है देखा तुझको साई मेरे दर्श के प्यासे नैना सांझ सवेरे मिट मर जाए तुझ पे हमसे न रूठे तू जिंदगी सौंप दे हम चरणों में तेरे यूं जिंदगी सौंप दे हम चरणों में तेरे यूं जिंदगी सौंप दे हम मन मंदिर से जाओ न साए मन मंदिर से चैन नाए मोहे चैन नाए साई बिन रहा न जाए जीवन तेरा दर्शन मेरी सब सांसें भी तेरी तुझ पे कुर्बान हो ए जीवन तुझ पे कुर्बान हो ए जीवन अब तमन्ना है ये मेरी अब तमन्ना है ये मेरी बस तमन्ना है ये मेरी तुझ पे कुर्बान हो ये जीवन अब तमन्ना है ये मेरी साई बिन रहा न जाए साई बिन चैन नाए मोहे चैन नाए साई बिन रहा न जाए साई बिन रहा न